Hello, welcome to the Lately in JavaScript podcast hangout. This time again, I have here with me Artur Sosinus directly from Latvia, Riga, right? Yeah.
No, but no. Very near. Okay. Yeah, hello from snowy Latvia. We already have a snow here, and it's kind of getting cold.
Yeah, that's great. Do you ski now?
No, I build snowmen.
Okay, at least it's related with the cold over here in Brazil. Is almost summer, and it's always hot over here this time and rainy. Today is not raining, but the other days it is, has been raining a lot. Anyway, we are here to talk about JavaScript, what happened in the latest times, latest weeks. And we are ready to get started with several interesting topics. This time, I would like to start talking about... let me share the screen here. An API for web services, in this case, is from Amazon. Amazon always had many APIs, but they were mostly for use from server-side languages like PHP and others. And this time they are publishing a preview of their SDK for JavaScript. So what this seems to mean, from what I could understand, is that from now on you will be able to call their APIs, their web services, from directly from the browser. So you don't need a server-side language to actually call their web services. They even say explicitly JavaScript in the browser, not JavaScript from, for instance, Node.js on the server. Artus, did you check this library? Did you try it or at least look at it somehow?
Yeah, well, I was quite surprised when you presented this topic because it's actually quite great news. Recently, I have published in JS classes one kind of web app package that was WebNode, and many users were requesting about adding a feature to synchronize these nodes between, you know, browsers, devices, and actually providing a plugin to such a service could be a great option to do that. So I will definitely check it out more. The only service that provided something like that previously, I think, was Firebase. Have you heard of it?
Firebase, isn't that a database?
Well, yeah, basically they provided they have a server and they provided JavaScript API to access it. You could do something similar. You could access it and store information from the browser.
You mean,
and,
you mean connect to the database from the browser or something like that?
I'd say basically like Amazon is now offering to simply store, I don't know, key values to send and something like that.
Right. Well, this is interesting. Actually, it's not exactly news that you can, for instance, send an AJAX request to web services because it's all HTTP requests. And what is interesting is that this time Amazon is making that an official SDK for doing that from the browser. It's no longer somebody trying to
hack their way.
Yes, because it's HTTP and anybody could develop that library. What I was wondering is, I'm not sure if all this API works. Probably this is not OAuth based, but when you use OAuth, there is an exchange of tokens and you actually need to be on a browser and as many APIs for some sites like, for instance, Facebook, they support, they can connect to their APIs via JavaScript. There is an SDK too, but it is OAuth-based, so it means they will have, in the end, they have a token, so can send requests to the API and on behalf of the user. So my concern is, I don't know if it is the case of Amazon, if there are any passwords, any tokens, where are those stored? Isn't that something that could be somehow abused, made it easy to steal those values? I don't know if you have thought of that.
There is a section about authentication access control, and basically they allow you to authenticate with the same Facebook SDK that also is written in JavaScript, or even Google, or even you're using your own Amazon login information. So they have thought about it.
Well, I confess I did not have the time to look into this, but
You can even use it from mobile devices, and they're saying that they can create a temporary security credentials just for a mobile device to authenticate and then use it.
Yeah, but where are those credentials stored? Are they in local storage, cookies?
I don't know. We need to jump in and read a little more.
Yes, I also have that question, so I was wondering. For instance, you mentioned you have your package that you're considering using this API or whatever to probably to store data in S3, right?
Yes.
So in your case, if you need to store the user password somewhere, so you don't have to ask the user password or token or whatever it is,
that would
somewhere.
Be local storage.
Yeah. Do you think using local storage wouldn't raise some security concerns regarding where the information is stored, maybe stolen by some malicious application or plugin or whatever? Obama, NSA.
Might be, but just months ago, we reviewed a package that can store the information securely. Again, in that case, you need to think about where to store the keys and stuff like that. But I don't know. For now, local storage seems to be quite secure, as it can be accessed from a specific website. Yeah. And I actually don't know if you can access it normally from a computer side.
Yes, I understand that from the browser, different domains would not have access to local storage of other domains. So from that point, it would be secure, but I think that information is stored somewhere in the user browser and probably be subject of being stolen. Although, as you remember, I think it probably be a good idea to also use that library that I think it was Jason Griffin that created it to encrypt data in local storage using, I think, probably a key that probably does not get stored there too, or else probably it wouldn't be secure. Well, anyway, this is probably a subject to more study, because we don't know how far these APIs have gone in terms of thinking of all details of possible security exploits. For now, it's just a preview. Have a developer preview of this Amazon Web Services SDK for JavaScript in the browser. And now talking also about JavaScript APIs available to JavaScript in the browser, I would like to also comment about an interesting API, because it seems to be what we thought it could be. If it is not official, nothing prevents somebody of creating an unofficial API. And in this case, it would be an API for Gmail. As far as I can remember, there are no APIs for official APIs for Gmail for any language. But I confess I did not check this to verify if it's accurate, that statement. And anyway, what we can see in this page, which is basically a project in GitHub, is an unofficial API from Kartik Tower, and he seems to have implemented several functions in the API that can access to data from the user emails.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just not sure how this works in practice, because it seems to even tell what is the current page, what are the numbers, what are the visible emails.
Well, there seems to be two ways to use it. Either you can create a Chrome extension, which would work with what current web page is displaying.
Oh, I see.
Or you can inject it directly into the page, either through the developer tools or through address bar. Or, you know, there may be many ways to inject the JavaScript.
Oh, really? So it wouldn't be actually some JavaScript that you have on some page from another domain.
Yeah. So basically, it's more like a hacking than API. But
yes, because it provides quite an interesting set of that are not just those types of functions that you would call from a server-side API, because these are seem to be accessed information from the user interface, like I said, visible emails, current page.
Yeah, basically it parses HTML and then provides the results.
Yes, that's probably what it does, because as far as I can remember, Google does not provide any type of API for Gmail. Well, now that you mentioned the development of a Chrome extension, that probably also be interesting in the sense that if somebody uses an unofficial Gmail API and put it in the Chrome extensions, App Store, or whatever they call it, would Google approve it? Or it's not official, it's probably a workaround, something that is not allowed.
Most probably.
Would Google allow it? I don't know. Well, I know that Google sort of censors some extensions that would allow users to download videos from YouTube. So they probably were advised to limit what they can do.
If you would search, I think there is no extension that uses this JavaScript, so maybe it's not allowed.
Yeah. And there you are. Yet another great API that addresses the needs of many developers, but you can't use it. Oh, well, that's life. Well, okay, anyway, moving on now to a different topic. Actually, I plan to talk about several interesting articles that are related with topics that are somehow related with similar things or related things. Let me start here sharing the screen. And let me... Okay, this first one here is RetireJS, which is basically a library for identifying libraries being used somewhere that have known vulnerabilities. And I also did not have time to try this, but it seems to be probably more useful as a Chrome extension, because if you use it as a Chrome extension, you probably can tell which are the JavaScript library is being used on the current page, and then tell, oh, and this page is using some vulnerable JavaScript libraries, and if you are the developer of this page, this site, you should probably update it, and that's what I got. But it also has other parts like a command line scanner and a grunt plugin. These I'm not sure how they would work. Did you try this? Did you look into this into some more detail to understand how it works in practice?
Yeah, well, command line scanner probably would scan local files, local HTML files, to see what JavaScript packages are used, or simple scan folders, and then if there was detected a vulnerability, some kind of vulnerability in any of the versions, it would say you could update it. No, they're basically similar into what Chrome extension would do.
Right, I but just, How would you tell that the page? What would that be? It would retrieve the page and from the command line and.
Yeah, probably read the file as a text file and parse for JavaScript.
Oh, I see. Because sometimes you are using JavaScript libraries that are loaded dynamically, so you don't see actually what are the JavaScript libraries until you are running it on a real browser. But, well, at least for static pages, I mean pages that are not loading libraries dynamically, it probably can be useful.
Yeah, well, there are multiple actual kind of points which I kind of can't understand right now how it's done. Basically, how would you determine if a library has a vulnerability? Simply by checking if it has an update or not, or how would you check the version of specific library? Not everyone puts something in the code, I don't know, to specify a version or something. It should be very library specific. So how they actually do that?
Yeah.
They probably have some kind of database or something.
Yeah,
like
probably
that.
They are able to do some fingerprinting to determine the version of a library when it is not that obvious. Well, anyway, this is I think this is good news because we don't see many tools for
such project management. Basically.
Well, I mean for security purposes, auditing or detecting insecure libraries for JavaScript. Well, at least for me, this is the first time I see one of those libraries. So I think this is good, and I strongly recommend people to try this library extension, Chrome extension, to at least quickly verify if their sites are not using library versions that are vulnerable and you are putting your site users at risk.
Actually, it would be great if they would put an online version where I can enter my website and they would check it and tell me if there's something wrong with it.
Well, if they can do that with the command line scanner, they can also put it in a site. That probably would be interesting. Yeah, well, at least...
I would test JS.
Yeah.
Test your site.
Yes, you should. But although probably I do not use some of the most popular libraries that they know they are vulnerable. But okay, it's
true.
Valid for any type of library. I don't know how it works in practice. If it just checks version numbers or just checks the actual code. It would be interesting if it checks the actual code because I don't know if you have watched the last month we had an hangout with a couple of people that are security concerned, but more on the PHP world. I mean, there's a OWASP developer, Jim Manico, and he actually presented several things regarding good security practices. And it is interesting that more and more people are being made aware about security concerns, and libraries like this one also are a good complement. And well, okay, we have covered this extensively. Let's move on to the next topic. And the next topic is about something that I found unusual, at least for me, which is also regarding code guidelines and stuff. Let me share the screen here. Okay, this one is JS Code, which is basically a tool to generate and share your own JavaScript guidelines. This is interesting because in some worlds, for instance, in PHP that never had a strong system of guidelines, more recently several developers, mostly related with frameworks and packages like that, they have gathered to define guidelines to use a single code structure of code, formatting rules, and this project here goes somehow the opposite direction, which is you can define custom guidelines which are not necessarily the same that other people use. So all this works, you just click here on this start button and they start defining some rules. I'm going to click here on some random options just to show what happens when you are done with all these possible choices. And then you continue and preview your JavaScript code guideline. I can preview it and it shows me the actual options that I picked, and then it shows some code which I trust. This is some arbitrary sample code just to see how it gets formatted. Let me increase the font here. And this is a bit unusual. I've never seen something like this. And probably, I was wondering if you could actually just validate some code with these rules. But well, I could not find anything here.
If they have an example code which can be formatted by the rules you specify, then most probably
they use some parser, right?
Yes. So maybe there could be some kind of standard that, I don't know, text editors could accept and format the code accordingly.
Mm. Because when you... this is the preview window, but if I click save, what happens? It's all right. The package was created successfully, and then
if share.
I can share, it just shares a URL.
Yeah.
So it's not exactly something for... an application.
It's maybe simply a website link.
It's just a website link, just
seems to
links
be
to a page of their own. And there is a list here of things that you should do with this library. Create a package, choose the coding standards you agree, share it with coworkers, question marks, and then profit. So the problem is question marks. What you do with these guidelines. Well, maybe it's something that you can, probably in a future version of this site, they could actually generate some file format for editors, as you suggested, maybe generate some library or some configuration for a library to parse the code and tell you if the code is okay or not, according to the rules that you define. Well, this is unusual just because of that, so I thought it would be worth mentioning because of that.
I've actually heard a lot about PHP standards because, well, everyone is pushing their own standards, but I've never heard a problem with JavaScript standards. Are there, have you heard any arguments, discussions about?
Well, I don't know, because I think from the beginning the code of JavaScript tends to use those rules that are already being used by Java developers, like camel case for function calls, but as you may have seen in this site, they allow you to define variations like tabs versus spaces, also the case, and many other parameters. So what is intriguing for me is what do you do with that. Maybe in the next version of this library, they can actually have things that are more, more useful to apply with those rules in practice. And talking about rules, moving on to the next topic, which is somehow related, which is about ESLint. ESLint is yet another Lint project. We have talked a lot about JSHint and JSLint. What's different about this one is that it is extensible. This means you can define new rules somehow. And this probably will be useful to use with the previous projects, JS code, which probably one can define a file with the rules that would be enforced by this one, the ESLint. And that probably will make it more useful than just having two projects that by themselves are not very useful, because I do not see myself writing JavaScript code to define new JavaScript rules, although there is always people that will do that. And, well, that's my take on what this ESLint could be used for. Yeah, I know it takes some configuration files and probably could take the rules from the JS code that you define. That's basically just a user interface for defining rules. I don't know. Did you try this project? Yes. I mean, did you read this article about it?
Yeah, well, when I first saw it, I was just like, oh, come on, another Lint. So, yes, yeah, exactly. Then when when I read that the feature that makes it different is the ability to define your own rules, I was thinking, well, no, you probably have used Lint and or Hint. Is it really common that you would define your own rules?
Right.
Did you have the need for it?
Well, at least for JSLint, I don't define my own rules, but I make exceptions to tolerate some of the demands of the rules that that they impose there by default. So some rules I want to make tolerable, so I just disable the warnings, and all of a sudden my code is clean. Because there are some rules there too pedantic. Why would you want them there? I'm not remembering any rule at the moment, but I know that often I disable it. Actually, you can even embed in JSLint, I think, both allow you to embed some comments that will define variations of the rules. The options of the parser, what it will complain or not. And if you put that in your code, next time you paste the code there in the JSINT or JSLint, it will recognize that as initial options, and then it probably will not complain about things that you don't want to complain. And I started putting those comments in my own code because I really did not want to go through all those complaints that I do not think are worth looking at. But okay, different people would have different rules, so it makes sense to have that defining as exceptions. But I'm not sure if it goes to the point of validating the format of the code. I do not remember, but I think there are rules like, you are mixing tabs with spaces, so we should either use tabs or spaces, not both. But other than that, it doesn't enforce that you use tabs for indenting or spaces for indenting or the number of spaces and things that are defined in this JS code formatting rules. I think it is this JS code thing just more for code formatting than the actual code, if it is valid, if it has any problems. Well, that's what I got from this. I don't know if you have tried it on the at a different perspective. Okay, now moving on to another library, which I also found a bit unusual, which is Grasp. It basically says that to search and replace your JavaScript code based on its structure rather than its text. And this, at least for me, I read this like, oh, this is a proper code refactoring tool, I think. I did not try it in practice, but I could look at the examples. And it says skip to demo, but skip to demo just to scroll to this window here. On if you have access to a sort of a command line, and you need to actually...
I think you can use the command from an example above, and they should work because they have a.
What is the command?
The first line of the first example, for example, grasp if test operator equals end.
Oh, I was not noticing.
The first line is a comment, and then it outputs what it found in the file, in the AGS file. and you can try the same command in the
this
text area.
So does copy and pasting work?
It should.
Or maybe not. It doesn't. So I need to type this. This is not for lazy people like myself.
Yeah, so as you see from command, you can query the structure of the code. If dot test, then you mean you are testing something, and you can define an operator that would check for if statements which has end in them.
I see. Well, basically what it does is to actually show the result that is seen above.
Yes, but probably you can do replace commands also, and I think maybe even something more. You can try typing help and see what commands it has.
Well, help, it's...
Yeah, nobody uses help, I know. No.
It's probably grasp...
grasp double dash help.
And it shows the usage.
Yeah,
okay, this is just the idea is just to let people know that this is one of those things that is probably useful in a certain context on which you need to rewrite part of your code. I don't know if you are going to use this much. I don't know. Have you ever needed to somehow refactor your code that probably could make use of a tool like this?
Actually, I don't know. I've been, I had a need refactoring in Java, in C#, but I think I've never refactored anything much in JavaScript or Lua or some weakly typed languages.
Yeah.
Well, because you can't really efficiently do that in weakly typed languages. So.
Well, actually, some time ago, probably not a very long time ago, I have seen a PHP class that does that. It would parse the PHP code, and then it would do replacements, like if you have variable name such and such, replace it by something. So it would not actually go through the text, the raw text of the code. It would actually parse it, so it make a... appropriate replacements. So it seems more like this grasp tool. But okay, it was for PHP. I did not know anything that could do this for JavaScript. So it's always good to know there are tools like this.
And from the website, it seems it's Node only. You can't really inject it in the web page.
Right.
And try.
Nowadays, everything command line based in JavaScript seems to be based in Node. So, well, if you are not using Node, probably you are not a very good JavaScript developer. Well, it depends. You can be a good JavaScript developer on the browser side, but probably not be a great enthusiast of Node on the server side. Now moving on to a section which I'm going to comment something that was just released.
Something that you did?
Yes, but not JavaScript specific. It's basically a feature of the PHP classes and JS classes site because they both share the same base code, which is to support that you can install packages using a tool named Composer. This tool was originally thought for PHP, installing PHP packages, but when you have web-based projects, you actually have also JavaScript, CSS, and image files in your project. So you also need to deploy them somehow. And this Composer tool seems to have been inspired on Node Package Manage, NPM. So it is a tool that takes some configuration for different aspects, and the configuration is actually defined in JSON format. So despite it was mainly meant for PHP, it takes a lot from the JavaScript world, starting from the formats of the configuration. But the reason why I'm talking about this is because PHP classes and JS classes sites now support Composer. This means that you can download and install packages from any of the sites using this Composer tool. So for those that are not familiar, just give a brief overview. Basically, this is a command line tool, very much like those Node.js-based tools. Like you just mentioned, Grasp is also a command line tool for Node.js. You install that tool. You can download download it basically in the .far format, which is a sort of a tar with PHP code inside, and it installs that .far archive somewhere. That .far archive contains classes and scripts for that tool. But that doesn't matter because you only deal with that one file, and then you call it from after install it. You call it from the command line to install the packages you need. And what you need to do is basically define a file in your working environment, or maybe even production environment, that defines which packages you want from the repositories so they get installed. So here is a sample of a JSON file that needs to be called composer.json. You need to put on it on a project directory, and then run composer, and it will fetch and install the packages that you have here defined here. In this case, of this example, there is a package named PHP classes form generation, and this composer would install it if you just run this command here, PHP composer far install, and it installs the packages that you request. There are some configuration here to tell from where, what is the repository that you want to download. And once it is installed, the package files are available on your directory. For PHP, it even creates some autoloader scripts that will help you to actually load your packages without doing the required for every class script. You just do a single require statement here, and then you just create an object of the class, and the autoloader that is generated by a composer will fetch, will include the necessary PHP scripts for loading the classes. But this is for PHP. In a project that you need to also have a JavaScript, CSS, and image files, there is an additional challenge, which is the fact that you have your project directory. Actually, I have a mistake here. It's not autoload vendor. It's vendor autoload. I'll need to fix this article. And as I was saying, if you install packages, could be either packages from PHP classes or JS classes, it will install them inside the vendor directory. And the problem with that is that the vendor directory probably will not be under your you should not put the vendor directory under your document root for security reasons, or else the files that you have in there would be accessible via the web. So you usually have probably a directory named web, and that would be your document root for your site domain. And that's where you would like to have your JavaScript or CSS or images installed. So the original Composer tool does not actually address that problem of making those files available under your document root. But fortunately, it can be extended with some plugins, which are also some other packages that can be downloaded and installed, and it can do anything after installing the packages. So it could, for instance, copy the files to the web directory. And this is the part that makes it useful to install JavaScript packages. For instance, you could go on JS classes and specify that you want to download some package with some JavaScript library, for instance, developed here by Arthurs. And you could tell with these plugins, tell Composer to move the relevant JavaScript files to your document root so they can be available for your site pages. And the same goes for CSS or image files, which also may need to go to some directory under the web document root. And this is basically the part that makes this useful for JavaScript projects that may include probably a mix of server-side and browser-side code. And the idea seems to me very interesting because this makes it more systematic, the deployment of projects. Arthurs, have you ever tried a Composer before or any other tool like this for installing packages for your projects?
I actually ran into Composer, I know, maybe about a year ago, maybe even more, when I needed to install one complex PHP software that was an analytical artificial intelligence software for university purposes. And that was the first time that I saw that it was using the Composer. So, I know, I installed it on Windows, which actually had a quite great Windows installer and graphical interface, basically no command lines. Installation of the packages actually went quite smoothly, so and I was really impressed with it because, well, I don't know, this kind of stuff usually don't work so well and you need more configurations and something like that. But well, in this case, that was something great, really. Most probably there are also other package managers out there. Why did you choose this Composer exactly? Was it the most popular, the most mature?
Well, I wanted to address a need of the PHP developers. Several PHP developers have asked to have a Composer support so they can tell users go here and install it with Composer. So Composer by default would fetch packages from packages, which is a different repository developed by the Composer developers. But the packages that are in PHP classes and probably not in that other repository would need to have support of Composer in PHP classes itself. So that is what was developed. It was turned PHP classes into also a Composer repository. This means that if you want to download the packages from PHP classes and also JS classes, you can just download them manually using either zip or tar.gz archives, or you can use Composer to do this and follow all the process of combining packages, probably from different sources, different repositories. You can combine packages from PHP classes with JS classes, packages, and probably others that exist. I don't know if there are any other Composer repositories. And so, yes.
Yeah, basically, well, there are many. I think there are many packages that even in PHP classes. I mean packages which depend on other classes in the same phpclasses.org site. So basically, if all developers would add their components to Composer, it would be just like downloading single package, and Composer will automatically install all the dependent PHP classes, right?
Yes, that's the idea, because one good thing that problem that Composer solves is the also installing the dependencies. For instance, if you have a package that requires several other packages, it will also install them, because each because in JS classes provide the author means to specify which are any other packages that it depends. For instance, I have a OAuth package that depends on the HTTP package. Mm-hmm. So when you request to install the OAuth package, it will install both, first one, then the other, because it's dependent. And furthermore, the dependencies between these packages are already defined in PHP classes and JS classes, because the sites provide means to the authors to let them tell which packages depend on what, and this way you can automate your installation, and this makes it a good way to have it ready for users that probably do not want to think much about what depends on what. And if they use Composer, they have all the dependencies solved. I remember I was talking about this OAuth package that I have in PHP classes that depends on the HTTP package. And very frequently, although the site lists on the page, oh, this package needs this one, you need to also download and install it, many users would not pay attention to that information and then complain in the forums, oh, where do I get the HTTP class? Then I started changing the examples code, and the first line says, also download the HTTP class from this directory. But if they use Composer, they would not even have to notice that information, because it would be installed automatically. They just would need to include that line that I mentioned above, that here is still as a mistake, I need to fix it. It would require a vendor autoload PHP, and it define an autoloader, and it would include all the, every time you need a class, it would also include another class from the repository that is dependent. And now about your question, why this Composer and probably not other package installers? Well, first, because there is this request from PHP developers to support it. And another aspect that I did not mention is that just like PHP classes, JS classes support Composer, it is extensible. I could add support to other package installers like Node Package Manager and so on. And this is interesting. And a few months ago, I talked about this with Michael Kimsel, and I thought supporting Node Package Manager, it NPM, it is not yet supported, but it is a possibility for the future. And then Michael said, oh, but for JavaScript is also interesting to support Composer, because many developers that use JavaScript also are using PHP, because it's part of a whole web project. So here it is, it's all supported now, and I think it is useful already. The only thing that is missing for now is that there is a need to have a plugin that will copy those JavaScript files to the document root wherever your application needs it. There are several plugins developed by other people to do that, but I probably develop one myself and put it in PHP classes. So if you want to install JS packages from JS classes, you can specify that plugin, and it gets installed, and then it will do whatever is needed to copy the files to the right places. Well, I think this is useful. I don't know if you have thought about that. What do you think? Is this something that will be appealing to use?
Yes, definitely. As you said yourself, sometimes it's confusing with all the dependent PHP classes, other packages that you need to download, and it's also time-consuming. So, of course, that would ease the task of at least trying out some PHP packages with lots of dependencies.
Right.
In phpclasses.org, for example, can you specify that this class relates on some JavaScript class in JS classes page? Can you specify cross-page dependency?
For now, I did not have support for that. For now, the only dependencies that you can specify is for packages in the same site. But okay. You could, in your Composer JSON, you can define whatever it needs. You don't need to have them downloaded automatically. But if you, when you define your project, you can define your Composer JSON and say, let me actually show something rather than just telling. So here, when you define here the packages that you need, here in the requires, you can put, you need the PHP classes form generation, but you probably also need JS classes / some package. And then you tell here below that the repository to look up for package with that name, you can also add here a line for JS classes or some other direct repository, whatever. You don't have to just use packages from one repository. You can mix packages from different repositories. And this is what makes it more interesting, because it addresses the needs of different developers. It may be maybe from PHP classes or people that prefer some other repository, and hopefully everybody will be happy. The only thing that for now it's not available exactly in the official Composer distribution is having a support for doing automatic login in private repositories. In the case of PHP class and JS class, they are not exactly private, but when you download certain packages, it requires authentication. So there was a guy named Stefan Ockdorfer. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing his name right. He's from this company, BitExpert. And he developed a patch and submitted a pull request to Composer to so it can read the username and password from a separate file called auth.json. And he submitted a pull request, but I don't know why it was not accepted and merged yet. Probably the authors of Composer have different plans to implement a similar feature. I don't know, because he already asked several times why the feature does not get merged and he did not get a reply. There must be some reason. It doesn't matter for now. What matters is that if you use the official Composer, it will prompt you the username and password. So with this patch version, it will can read the username and password from a file, auth.json, that has this format. You can specify for PHP classes, I have this username and password. For JS classes, this username and password. And since the official Composer version is not available, the PHP class is distributed a patched version of Composer Far that is in this the URL and this link, which is basically www.phpclass.org/composerfar. And you can install this version, and it's the same version that you have the official Composer apart from this patch. It merged the patch by Stefan, and it will work. And that's it. That's the only difference that this patch version has. And just to make it less tedious to have to enter the username and password again. But other than that, it's all the same, and it's all useful. I've been using and testing extensively, and it works very well. You even forget that there is some authentication going on. Well, anyway, the idea here is just to encourage people to start using Composer more, because it is helpful to everybody to combine packages, probably from different repositories. And so in PHP classes and JS classes, authors that have their packages in the Composer repository will earn additional reputation points that will increase their reputation for every package there they have put in the repository. And for instance, I'm going to open here the let me see, it's a bit slow, but okay, you can see that there are some actions here that were recorded and earned some additional points because I added all my packages to the Composer repository. And the site makes it easy if you want to add all packages you have at once, because you have many packages, so you don't have one at a time. I'm probably going to make this even easier to automatically add the packages to the Composer repository if there is at least one user that requests it. And probably the author doesn't even have to go through the screen to add the packages to the repository. And, well, that's basically it. And hopefully this will encourage more people to use Composer, and let's see how this goes for the future of the practices of the authors. Arthur, do you think that you start using Composer more and enable your packages with Composer support? What do you think?
You're giving extra points. I'm doing it already.
Oh, silly me. Why did I ask? Okay. And, well, hopefully that will encourage more and more people to do it. But as I said, I'll figure out something to do it more automatically. The author doesn't have to even go there, as long there is somebody requesting it. And that somehow will reflect on the perceived qualification of the developer that is using this Composer, because he's conscientious to make it easier for their users to install their packages. But basically that's it. We are reaching the end of our podcast, and we're finally going to one last session on which you comment on the latest winners of the Innovation Award. Unfortunately, the month that we are commenting now, which is, I think, well, we are in December, but it was the packages that were announced to be the winners of
October.
Exactly October. So, unfortunately, there is only one package to comment, because for some reason that was not a very good month.
Well, it means September was not a very good month, right?
Actually, no, it was the ones that were released in October.
Oh, okay.
Basically, only one package. Let me share the screen here, because for some reason it stops sharing the screen. Okay. In this case, there is only one package by Marplo from Romania, I think, right? So yeah. Basically, this package, what it does is to convert XML documents to the JSON format. I don't know these days if people are using many XML format documents, but I think this makes sense in probably some context that you need to deal with the XML. Because since, at least in my opinion, since JSON got popular, nowadays people are not using anything else to store structured data in the files. I don't know. What do you think?
That's the funny thing. You could say that JavaScript was built for XML-like documents because we all know we are using a DOM tree in HTML. Okay. HTML is the version of XML, so it kind of was built for that purpose. But on the same page, using JSON is even more easier because, well, it's basically a JavaScript object. So I'd say that this is actually quite useful component that could be used probably on any API that uses XML and automatically converted to JSON, thus quite easy usable for JavaScript. I have an example. I have screen shared the example of this package, and basically you could see that how it parses the document. You could see do you see the screen share?
Yes.
Yeah, so you could see that it parses the attributes separately, and for some reason, for example, we have a title and the text inside, and then it's parsed as a title key, and then it has another key, a text. I assume it's something similar to, I don't know, HTML nodes that probably has a text node inside a specific tag or something like that, and that is why it's parsed this way. But well, it's something this library specific, I'd say, and but still, it seems quite useful, and basically, as I said, you can turn any XML-based API into JSON API through this.
Right, because I think the fact that, as you said, in the browser, you already have a DOM. Libraries that you can use to parse your XML or even HTML, and it's very easy to traverse the objects and then extract it in a JSON format. So it's all simplified, but I did not know a library that could do this. So kudos to Marplow for this library.
Actually, thinking about it, I don't know, even in PHP or other languages, as I am lately using Lua, in every of them, JSON is more easier to use than XML. So.
Yes, that's because typing XML is tedious, because if you have a long tag to open, you also have to close the tag, and it's mandatory for XML. So for people to write JSON is more convenient because you don't have to type the whole name of the tag, of the attribute, again, to close the tag. And probably that's the biggest complaint about XML, and that's why if you talk about XML these days, you think, oh, that's so 2000s.
Exactly.
You are old. You are obsolete.
So soon there will be a case when we won't be working with DOM tree, but rather DOM JSON representation or something like that.
Well, in practically it could all be that instead. Well, I think you have to go through the JSON, the DOM libraries to get the children and stuff. But it could be an idea for the future, but. For now we need to deal with the past, and that's the way it goes.
At least we could, serialize HTML into JSON and then deserialize it back to the HTML tree.
Yeah, well, at least for server-side, most APIs these days, they no longer use XML, even less SOAP or other.
True.
XML RPC and other APIs with the XML formats. It's all JSON now, all over. And, good to have this library. Unfortunately, we do not have any other to comment this month. We have more next month. There were more nominees. But we need to wait until then. So with this, we practically end this hangout. I would like to thank you again, Arthurs, for coming.
Sure.
And filling in again for Michael Kimsel, that is still very busy.
For busy Michael?
He got so popular, now everybody demands his work.
And, finally will start to pay him for showing up on podcast.
Yeah, that's probably a hint. He doesn't show because I do not pay him well. Well, anyway, let's see if he can make it next time. When with this, we have ended this podcast. And on my behalf, that is all for now. Bye.
Bye.